This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Episode 267 of your weekly Handgun World podcast coming right up.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, coming to you from the Handgun World Mobile Studio. At least for this small segment of the show. Primarily, this episode is about triggers, but before I get into triggers, I have a gun review. People have been asking me to review guns more often. I've been getting a lot of email requests on that. As you know, my policy is I don't like to review a gun if I don't own it, or at least if I haven't shot it a decent amount. And I'm talking about if I haven't put, you know, 100 to a couple hundred rounds through a gun, I don't feel it's fair to you to be talking about a gun when I really don't have a lot of experience with it. I think the best reviews out there are from people who have quite a bit of experience using the gun that they're reviewing. Well, the Walther PPQ is a very popular striker-fired pistol right now. And Chaz, the unnamed trucker from the Road Gunner podcast, actually owns one. So I thought, well, this would be a good guy to give us a review, give us a gun review, because he owns it and he's shot it a lot. So here we go. We're going to do a gun review on the Walther PPQ with Chaz from the Road Gunner podcast. Stay tuned.
Well, joining me for this segment is Chaz, the unnamed trucker from the Road Gunner podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. Hey, I wanted to bring you on. You've got an event coming up, but before we get into talking about the event, I got a couple questions that I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
Well, you got a new gun, and a lot of people have been wanting to hear about this gun, especially me. And actually, I've had a few people that have said that they've heard about the gun and didn't know anybody that had one. But I said, well, I do, and he's going to be on my show pretty soon. Talk about your Walther PPQ.
Well, I've had it for about a couple months now. It is indeed the Walther PPQ M2, and that's the American-style variant with a traditional thumb-released magazine release versus the M1 version has a paddle-style trigger guard magazine release that some folks may be more familiar with the HKs, and they're both great guns. The M2 just happens to be what I picked up. It's a striker-fired polymer frame pistol, and it's got an extremely comfortable grip. It's super ergonomic. It's one of the features that I really like is it's fully ambidextrous. You can change that magazine release to the opposite side if you wish. When I am doing left-handed manipulations, I just use my trigger finger on my left hand or my middle finger of my left hand to release the magazine.
Yeah.
But the slide stop is fully, it's got a slide stop lever on both sides. It's an extended slide stop lever.
That's nice.
It has adjustable rear sight, and it's got a ledge on the side so you can do one-handed manipulations. You can rack it off your belt or your holster if it's Kydex.
Very important.
The grip is just fantastic. The fit and finish is incredible. It has got some of the features that, you know, they're cool, but they're not really necessary. It's got a loaded chamber indicator off of the extractor. And it's got forward cocking serrations, which I don't ever use. It's got a full Picatinny mill standard 1913 Picatinny rail. And it's got a capacity of 15 rounds. The magazines are made in Italy by Metgar. Extremely high quality. And I'm loving it. It's super accurate. And the trigger is phenomenal.
Well, talk about the trigger, because I've heard that it's one of the best out-of-the-box striker-fired triggers on the market.
As far as the trigger goes, it's a technically it's a single-action-only gun as defined by the ATF. But the things that I like about the trigger and that make it a quote-unquote good trigger is it's got a very smooth take-up. It's not extremely short take-up, but it's that the portion when you begin to press the trigger where it's actually not doing anything before it releases the striker, it's smooth, unlike some of the other guns out there. It is not terribly heavy feeling. It's rated at 5.5 pounds, but it feels like a much lighter gun. The take-up feels much more like my 3.5 pound 1911 trigger.
Really?
The stacking is extremely limited, and it breaks very crisply. It's not 1911 crisp. It's not like glass rod crisp, but it's, you know, very decent. And the reset is, I think it's a tenth of an inch reset. Extremely quick follow-up shots with it.
And you say it's just slightly bigger than a Glock 19, right?
A little bit longer than a Glock 19, and about feels a little bit heavier. I don't know if that's just the weight of the slide geometry. And you know what the thing about the Glock is that I like? It just says, I am a machine for one purpose.
Right.
And it does its purpose very well. The Walther has got just a tad more class. It has the exact same function, same purpose, self-defense. But it's not. I've never put it in somebody's hand and they've gone, oh, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Everyone that I put this gun in their hand has gone, oh, this is fantastic. I gotta get me one of these.
Well, I had a chance to go to a local gun shop recently, and I got to dry fire it several times and put it in my hand at a local gun shop, and I'm still kind of regretting not bringing it home with me.
Well, yeah, you better, you know, there's Mark Thomas, the PR guy over there, the marketing director at Walther Arms of North America, has said that there's going to be a price increase this year of about $50.
Oh, gee, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you might want to get one fairly soon. Believe me, an extra $50 is worth it, but if you can get, you know, right now those magazines are going for $50, so that's going to, you know, there's your extra magazine right there. So
the Walther PPQ, basically, it's a service-size pistol.
Yes, it's a full-size service pistol, and you can get extended magazines that hold 17 rounds, just like your Glock 17 would hold, or the magazines right now, the standard magazines it comes with are 15 rounds.
Yeah, and Jason Christensen's making Black Mambas for him, isn't he?
He most certainly is. I have a carbon fiber pattern Black Mamba CE for mine, and a double mag pouch, vertical mag pouch for that, also in the carbon fiber pattern. And they're awesome.
Those carbon fiber Kydex shells, those look pretty cool.
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
I got to admit, those look pretty cool. Those make a fashion statement on the range, don't they?
They do, and you know, the inside the waistband a little bit defeats the purpose. But when it's off my belt and I'm looking at it in the safe or whatever, it looks nice.
Well, I'm glad you did that review, because I don't like to review guns that I haven't at least shot, and so I wanted to bring you on because you've spent some time with it. How many have you given it a 1,000-round trigger job yet?
Not yet, it's probably about 400 so far with it, and man, I'm not sure it's going to need 1,000. It's really superior trigger.
Well, when I had Hadaway on the show a few weeks back, you know, he said it's probably the easiest gun that he puts into new shooters' hands, and he gets them to shoot well with it pretty quick.
Yes, but he doesn't know anything, so
yeah.
He just can't. No, yeah. Wait a minute, I'm not supposed to say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if John Hathaway thinks you shoot well, then you need more training.
Absolutely.
Well, good. Thanks for the review on that. The last question, I know we're pressed for time. The last question I want to ask you is about truck driving and carrying a gun. Not everybody that listens to my show listens to yours, although you should, folks. You need to listen to the Road Gunner podcast. You have an event you want to talk about, I know, but spend 2 minutes talking about what's it like driving a truck around the country and carrying a gun.
Well, it's exactly, let's say, first of all, that carrying a firearm in a commercial vehicle is perfectly legal, and that it is, the rules are exactly the same as they would apply to driving around in a quote-unquote four-wheeler, which is a car, in trucker parlance, as they say. So everywhere that I go is perfectly legal to go, just as if I was hauling it around in my car. So I've got an Arkansas permit, a Utah permit, a Florida permit. That gets me about 40 states. Like, in fact, it's easier to name the states I can't go to.
Yeah.
What you have to do is you have to know the specific rules in every state. And so that's the most difficult part of it is becoming a sort of expert on where you can and cannot go with the gun. Specifically, like airports or military facilities. I don't deliver to military facilities or prisons or any place where I would have to be, where I'm not legally allowed to carry a gun. So I just don't go there. And luckily I have the choice to do that because I'm an owner operator. And I don't have to, I'm not forced, like a company driver might be, to go to a facility that, may or may not have the facilities that where you can legally be at. Like a military base. I used to deliver to military bases, and they search you. So I would not try to go to a place where I couldn't carry either. So
you don't recommend that. Well,
I don't. Yeah. Another thing, as a truck driver, truck drivers are very nosy, so I have to keep it concealed
at
all times. And the rumor out there that it's very prevalent is that it's illegal to carry a gun in a truck somehow. It's a federal law. It's not. There are no federal laws or rules on the books saying that you can't carry a gun in a truck. But companies will tell their drivers that it's illegal so that they can avoid liability. If you defend yourself on the road, guess who the family may sue, you know, even though you may be perfectly justified.
Right.
They're going to sue the company because they've got big deep pockets, right?
Right.
Insurance settlement. They don't want to have anything to do with that. So they tell their drivers in these orientations, and I've heard them from the company I'm contracted to. I'm a contractor. They say, hey, it's illegal. Don't do it. And if and they've got basically unwritten anti-firearms policies. Their terminal is marked no weapons allowed, although they're in a state where it doesn't have the legal force of law. So
yeah.
Good.
So they scare people and lie to them and tell them that it's illegal.
Imagine that.
Basically to scare them out of doing it.
Right. And if you spend a lot of time at a lunch counter in the truck stop, listen to a guy with rainbow suspenders and Velcro shoes who should be out making money, but instead he's sitting there smoking cigarettes and sipping coffee, they may not know what they're talking about. Imagine that.
Imagine that. You mean people, really, they don't know what they're, all truck drivers don't know what they're talking about? Interesting.
Yeah. Just like any other factor or group in the American public, 95% of them are just not informed.
Yeah, I misspoke. I meant to say not all truck drivers know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say 95% of them don't, but, and, you know, I don't claim to be an expert on everything or really anything, but I have been forced to, as I've chosen to carry this gun in my truck for the last 4 years now, you know, one of the big influences was Tom Gresham.
Right.
You know, every week you get somebody calling into the show, a truck driver going, well, I'd carry my gun, but it's not legal. And Tom has to correct him every time, and you hear it like every week.
Right.
And so my decision said, well, if it's legal to do it, I've got the gun, I've got the permit, I'm going to carry this thing. And that led to podcasting and then eventually to going to classes and deciding to become a firearms instructor. And the problem with that with my accent, firearms,
yeah.
It's one word, firearms.
That's right. You're a firearms instructor. There you go.
Yep.
Well, congratulations on being a firearms instructor. So that brings us to the final topic to talk about. You have an event coming up. Talk about it.
Okay. May 15th through the 18th in Conway, Arkansas, I will be hosting the Road Gunner Podcast, Mag 40, sponsored by Nighthawk Custom Training, and Shoot House USA. I'll be teaching the Mag 20 live fire portion of it. That's the marksmanship portion with the basics, fundamentals of marksmanship, accuracy, one-handed shooting, different positions, and I'll talk a little bit about mindset and things like that. I'm going to add my own flavor to the class, and that is the 15th and 16th. I'll be instructing that at Shoot House USA. On the 17th and 18th, we'll be shifting the instruction duties to Masad Ayoub, my mentor, my friend, and my gosh, so much. This guy has been literally a firearms instructor and trainer longer than I've been alive. And if you want to meet him, we're going to have MAG 20 Armed Citizens Rules of Engagement at Microtel Inn and Suites in Conway, Arkansas. And if you're going to take the class, I do suggest that you stay. Even if you're going to take the full 4 days, stay at the Microtel Inn and Suites because it's about half as expensive as the surrounding hotels.
Yeah.
There's a lot of events going on. There's graduation for the colleges around there and the high schools, and their rate is about half of what it's a good discount. So their phone number, if you want to register for a hotel room there, is 501-327-0898, and please mention MAG 20, MAG 40, or Nighthawk Custom Training. And that conference room is there is nice. The hotel is nice. And we hope to have a successful event and have it many years in the future.
Yeah, and people have heard me talk about what a great experience going to MAG 40 was. I did it twice. And, you know, don't miss out on it, folks. I mean, MASS doesn't teach all that many classes, and it's the best money you'll ever spend in the training business. I'm convinced of that.
Absolutely. The live fire is a great fundamental marksmanship program that you can build upon when you go to your high zoot classes with the moving and the shooting. Gabe Suarez class, combat focus shooting, beyond concealed carry. And what I would like to bring is a perspective of a person that's, I'm a blue collar guy, I'm a smart guy, and I don't have a college degree, but I'm fairly articulate. And I want to bring other truck drivers into the fold into concealed carry. And I think it behooves you as a responsible citizen on the road, if you're going to carry a gun, you should know how to use it before you bring it out on the road. So I want truck drivers to come in and get the truck driver's perspective, the blue-collar guy, you know, the average guy that just decided, hey, this is something I want to do. And I have put the time in and thousands of dollars in ammunition and training to get to the point where I feel that I can be an instructor. So now I got the piece of paper. So come on out and help me help you become a better shooter, May 15th through the 18th.
Yeah, that's excellent. You know, before I let you go, Chaz, you said something offline that I want to bring online because I thought it was very good. You said whenever you put a post on Facebook about training, you get 14 or 15 responses, but when you put a post about guns and gear, you get 100 responses.
Yeah, well, guns and gear, somebody put it this way, that guns are something that everybody has and something that they can relate to, and they almost feel like if they can't afford to go to class, they almost feel guilty, and they don't want to even look at it or acknowledge the fact that training exists. And, you know, if you're going to just do one class, do MAG 40. I mean, I would love for you to go to Beyond Concealed Carry. I'm going to get as much flavor from different trainers. In fact, March 1st and 2nd, I'm going down to Central Florida to train with Brian Wang. He's a Masada Group staff instructor.
Good.
And he does a lot of great stuff down there. And if you're in Central Florida, please go out and visit him. But I want to get my own voice, my own perspective, and bring this to you guys out there. So if you want to register for my class, please do that. It's nighthawkcustomtraining.com go to the Classes tab, go down to Mag 40 in Conway, and sign up for both the Mag 20 Live Fire and the Mag 20 Classroom. You have to register separately for both because there's going to be about 25 seats left for the classroom portion, and there's about maybe 7 seats left for the Live Fire portion.
Excellent. Good. Chaz, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, I plan to talk about triggers in this episode. This wasn't originally planned to discuss triggers, but, you know, sometimes things happen and you feel the need to just talk about it and kind of get it out there right away. And I had an interview come up where we talked about triggers, and you're going to hear part of it. Actually, I made a guest appearance over at the Road Gunner podcast with the Unnamed Trucker. And in that guest appearance, in that guest interview, Chaz asked me a question about triggers and about the trigger job that I talk about, but more importantly, just triggers on pistols. And I thought, you know, I hadn't done an interview, or excuse me, I hadn't done a podcast on triggers in quite some time. So I thought I would go ahead and just expand on this subject a little more. I really believe that the trigger is probably the most important component of a defensive handgun. And here's what I mean by that. Not so much the mechanics of the trigger or the trigger pull weight, but really how well can the shooter press the trigger. You know, everything else can get screwed up if you don't have a good trigger press, a good smooth trigger pull. And I've seen this happen very often. I've seen it in classes that I teach. I've seen it in classes where I was the student. It's happened to me a lot. And in competition, I've seen it. Here's what I mean. I've seen very good shooters take an average gun. And hey, I'll just go ahead and I'll say it. Glocks, M&Ps, XDs, Ruger, polymer pistols. From a trigger standpoint, those are average guns. What I'm talking about is they've got average triggers. There are guns with better triggers than those, but they're very popular concealed carry and service pistols. I've seen a real good shooter take a striker-fired gun like that and shoot lights out. I mean, just really shoot well. Max Michel, Dave Savigny, Bob Vogel. How about those competitive shooters? I've seen instructors. I've seen John Payne at Suarez International. I've seen Masada Yub take a striker-fired gun. I've seen both those guys shoot incredibly well with a striker-fired gun because they're very good shooters. At the same time, I've seen people use a $1,500 1911 with a finely tuned trigger, and they can't hit squat with it because they haven't practiced. So why do I say the trigger is the most important part? Because you can take a gun with an average trigger and you can shoot it well if you have good trigger control. I don't care if you have this finely tuned 1911 that's a custom shop built whiz-bang 1911, right? And you dropped all this money on it. Its inherent accuracy is probably outstanding. But in the hands of somebody that doesn't have good marksmanship, well, they may fall short. Okay? So, just because the gun is accurate, the gun itself is accurate, just because it has a match grade barrel, and just because it's hand fitted at the custom shop, and just because you bought the finest ammo money can buy, does not mean that you're automatically going to shoot well unless you know how to properly press the trigger. Yes, your sights have to be in perfect alignment. That is, if you're using sights. Right? We all know that at some distances, you're not going to use sights. Some distances, you're just going to point and shoot. And because you've practiced it thousands and thousands of times, you're going to be able to put the bullets where you want them to go. We see that in competition shooters all the time, don't we? They won't admit that they're point shooting, but guess what? They're point shooting. Or sometimes they don't even know that they're point shooting. But indeed, they are. But the trigger, okay? The trigger, if you can manipulate the trigger well, you're going to be able to shoot the gun well. I've seen people take a double action only revolver, a J-frame revolver that typically have pretty tough double action only triggers. I've seen them at 50 yards or 100 yards ring steel plates. Yeah, it can be done. Hey, let's not forget about the guy here in Texas. Let's not forget about the older guy here in Texas with a 357 Magnum revolver, made a 55-yard shot on a bad guy who was trying to kill a cop. A 55-yard shot with a 357 Magnum double-action revolver. Even if it was a single action. Even if he was shooting his revolver in single action mode, you got to have good trigger control and good fundamentals and good sight alignment to make a 55-yard shot, don't you? So think about it. So you might be asking the question, well, Bob, you know, what kind of trigger should I have? Well, I don't know. Come to one of my classes and I'll be able to tell you. I'll be able to tell you if I think the gun that you have is a suitable gun that you can fire effectively, or maybe if it, you might want to think about something else. Or I'll teach you how to get the most out of your gun. The Pistol Fighting Dynamics course that Ben and I are doing up in Dallas, March 8th. I don't know if you know, Ben and I are teaching Pistol Fighting Dynamics. We're really going to work on pressing the trigger, because we're also going to work on a lot of different scenarios where you might not have a perfect sight picture, but we're going to teach you how to shoot and put hits on target. And a lot of it is going to depend on whether you've got good trigger control or not. So, what kind of trigger? Well, you're going to hear Chaz and I talk about some different types of triggers in the interview coming up, okay? And again, if you listen to his show, the interview portion that we do will be repetitive, because it'll be the same portion on triggers that Chaz and I talked about. However, you need to listen to that entire interview that we did over at his show, the Road Gunner Podcast. You need to listen to the whole thing, because we talked about a whole lot more than triggers. We got into some pretty good stuff. Now, some of you might like the 1911 trigger. Some of you might like a single action only trigger that doesn't move much, and it doesn't take a whole lot of pressure with your trigger finger to fire that gun. And they got very short resets. I would have to admit that the 1911 platform pistol pretty much has the best trigger of any gun you can pretty much purchase on the open market. Having said that, there are some disadvantages to the 1911. Now, next week, I am going to give you the first report, the first decent length report on my one-year experiment. I can tell you this, that I used my training 1911, my Magnum Research Desert Eagle 1911. I used that. I shot IDPA a couple weeks ago in CDP, and I placed 4th out of 10. Okay? First time I had ever fired the gun. First time I had ever fired the 1911 that I bought, I placed 4th out of 10 in the CDP Custom Defensive Pistol Division. That was a local match. It wasn't a state match, so I'm not going to say I'm one of the best shooters in the state. I'm not going that far. But I went to my local match. It was a six-stage match, and there were 10 guys shooting 1911s in CDP. Well, actually, I think some of them were shooting striker-fired 45s. And I placed 4th. Now, I've been shooting a long time. Well, I mean, compared to some of you listening to this, some of you have been shooting a whole lot longer than me, but like I said, I've been doing this since 2005. Shooting skills, some of them are transferable. Okay? When you learn to shoot something, you can pretty much shoot almost anything fairly well when you learn the fundamentals of shooting, when you learn how to action shoot, which is what we do in IDPA and USPSA. So even though I've been shooting a lot of striker-fired guns the last several years, Glocks and M&Ps a little bit before Glocks, a lot of that stuff carries over, folks, right? You still have to draw the gun. You still have to present it to the target. You still have to remember the fundamentals. You still have to be able to do it when you're on the move. A lot of that's transferable. And pretty much it was my first time competing where I had to make sure I thought about depressing the thumb safety. to disengage the safety so I could fire the gun. No problem. Okay? No problem during my first IDPA match in, gosh, how long has it been? That's probably been the first time in 7 years, I think. Maybe 6.5 years that I shot a 1911 in IDPA. It's probably been about that long. Because for the short time that I owned the Ruger SR 1911, I never shot the thing in IDPA. However, I found the trigger to be awesome. Right? I mean, hey, the triggers on most 1911s, and by the way, on that particular gun, that has a magnificent trigger. One of the best, biggest reasons why I bought it. It's a Series 70 1911. And, I don't find the trigger much different on that than I do on the new Sig Sauer RCS 1911 that I bought. But, again, the triggers are wonderful. Now, striker-fired guns, which is, you know, those are probably the most popular guns on the planet right now. Glocks, XDs, Rugers, M&Ps, Walthers, you know, Walther PPQs and Walther PPSs and P99, you know, guns like that. Those are some of the real popular striker-fired guns. Each one of them has a little bit different trigger. Now, you've heard me talk about I like to have a trigger that has a very positive reset. The reason is because I taught myself shoot to reset, or shoot from reset, I should say. Shoot from reset. In other words, press the trigger, fire the gun, only let the trigger out far enough until it resets itself. And what I like about Glocks is you can definitely feel and hear the trigger reset. It's pretty easy. You can feel it and you can hear the trigger reset. It's audible. I mean, even at the range, you can hear that click, that positive click. And I train myself only to let the trigger out that far. What's great is it makes every trigger pull after the first shot just a little bit shorter. It's the same feel. It's the same trigger weight. It's the same break, but you shoot it just to reset. And every shot until you have finished firing is a little bit of a shorter trigger pull. I like consistency of triggers. The XDs seem to have real good triggers. The M&P Shield has a very good striker fire trigger. I'm not a big fan of the standard out-of-the-box triggers of the regular full-size or mid-compact-size M&Ps. I know you can get an Apex trigger kit for a little over $100 and drop it in. And see, think about it now. What does that tell you when people buy Apex trigger kits for their Smith & Wesson M&P pattern guns? Aren't they proving my point? Right? Aren't they proving that a good trigger is one of the most important parts of a pistol? And being able to fire that pistol well, and being able to fire it accurately, and put the rounds where they want. They don't like the trigger that comes in the stock M&P. So what do? They buy Apex Tactical trigger parts and drop them in. Anywhere from $100 to $150 or so, depending on what you buy. So there you go. Now, think about when you bought your gun, or any of your guns. Right? What's probably the first thing you tried when you bought your gun? You go to a store, you buy a gun from a gun store, and they hand it to you. They verify that it's unloaded. They hand it to you. What does everybody do, right? They press the trigger, right? They dry fire it a couple times to check to see what the trigger's like. Everybody's thinking trigger, trigger, trigger. Now, you've heard me talk about the 1,000-round trigger job. I won't get into that right now. I did a whole podcast on that in the interview coming up, the little segment that I'm going to play that Unnamed Trucker and I did. We talked about the 1,000-round trigger job, why I call it that, what it means, and so on and so forth. Okay, then there's double-action, single-action triggers, DA/SA. If you read gun specifications, you'll see some guns that have a DA/SA trigger. They're not really my cup of tea. Some people like them. Some people do well with them. Not really my cup of tea. Okay? I really don't like them. I just don't care for double action, single action guns. I've owned them before. I owned one. Really couldn't get used to the trigger. Didn't really care for it that much. I've never gone back to a DA/SA pattern gun, trigger gun. Again, we talk more about that in the upcoming interview, so I won't repeat myself. Now, let me talk about revolvers. You're going to see different types of revolvers out there. You'll see defensive revolvers, the common snub-nose J-frame-style revolvers, okay? You'll see a lot of them with double action only. You'll see specs that say DAO, double action only. That means that's the only way you can fire that gun. You press on the trigger, it's performing two actions, and it's always in double action mode. That's it. Most of those double action triggers on revolvers can be pretty tough for some people to manipulate and do it accurately. With lots and lots of practice, with lots of practice and lots of training and lots of instruction, yeah, you can master those. You can master a double action only trigger on a defensive revolver. I wouldn't recommend that a beginner get a gun like that. And unfortunately, so many of those little snub-nosed lightweight revolvers are sold to beginners. Boy, is that a mistake. I don't know why gun store clerks do that, but they do. And those are really experts' guns. Those are guns that really should not be in the hands of beginners, not because beginners can't be safe with them, but it's because most beginners can't shoot those types of guns very well. People who practice and train a lot, they can do real well with double action only revolvers. Then you see revolvers normally with an exposed hammer. Most of the revolvers with an exposed hammer can be shot in double action, or they can be shot in single action. Okay, they're not DA / SA guns, but they can be shot in either mode. You can just press the trigger and you're shooting it in double action, or you can cock the hammer back first and then press the trigger, and now you're shooting in single action. Let me go back to the DA / SA guns, double action, single action. For some people who might not know, the reason they're called that is because you fire the first round in double action mode, assuming that the gun is decocked. In other words, you chamber a round, and what do you notice when you chamber a round with a DA SA gun? It cocks the hammer, right? The slide comes back and it cocks the hammer. There's a decocking lever so that before you put it into your holster, you decock it. What that means is when you draw that gun, if you don't pull the hammer back, it's decocked. Your first shot is double action. However, the gun cycles and the slide retracts during the cycle, and now the gun is in single action mode because the hammer's cocked. So when you press the trigger again and again and again and again, you're shooting in single action. Okay? So try not to confuse everybody. But see, that's kind of one thing I don't like about those guns, is I have to get used to two different types of trigger pulls on the same gun. I like guns that have a consistent trigger, same trigger press every single time. I can train myself for that appropriate trigger press. And in the heat of the moment, in a battle, when you're fighting for your life, hey, let's face it, folks. Right? Why do we carry handguns? Because we can't carry cops, right? Okay, haha, I make a joke about it at the beginning of every show, but why do we carry a gun? To save our life, all right? In the middle of a high, high stress encounter, like saving your butt and being able to go home to your family, in my opinion, the last thing you want to think about or worry about is, what mode is my gun in? I need to make an accurate shot here, or I need to put a shot right between his eyes if I can, or I need to put a shot in his heart if I can, or in one of the vital areas. Am I in double action mode or am I in single action mode? Now, some people who own those guns will tell you, hey, we don't even think about that. We just pull the trigger. Yeah, but coming up in the interview, you're going to hear me talk to Chaz about what I think is a major disadvantage of the double action / single action guns. And I'll leave it at that. And that's why I see most people who come to training class. As a matter of fact, the class that I'm teaching, the Suarez International class that I'm teaching, coming up in April 5th and 6th, I'm teaching the close range gunfighting version 2 which, by the way, we put a lot of point shooting techniques in that class. I'm teaching that one. You see a lot of people that show up for those classes, mainly with striker-fired guns that have consistent triggers. Or they come with 1911s that have consistent triggers. And by the way, people who come to that class, you'll be pressing that trigger about 600 times. I'll make sure you go through 600 rounds. I'm teaching that for two solid days, 8 to 5 each day, Saturday and Sunday, April 5th and 6th, in San Antonio. That class is over half full. Don't procrastinate, by the way, if you're planning on taking that class. You can find that at my website, handgunworld.com. That's the Suarez International Curriculum, Close Range Gunfighting Version 2. But that's why, and whenever Ben and I teach a class, that's, you know, we see a lot of striker-fired guns. However, I wish those of you who own revolvers, I wish more people would bring revolvers to our classes. I know a lot of people carry revolvers. I know a lot of you listening to this show, you're carrying a revolver today. Or you just carried one yesterday. Or you're going to be carrying one tomorrow. Please practice with those revolvers. Some revolver triggers are not real easy to master. Get out and practice with those and shoot them. Okay, other triggers that you're going to see that I really like. A lot of you know I'm a big fan of the Carr Arms line of pistols. Carr, K-A-H-R. I have two of them. I have a Carr PM9 and I have a Carr P380. They are double action only triggers, but boy, are they smooth. They're smoother triggers than most double action revolvers that I've shot. And you don't even have to give them a trigger job. I mean, they're smooth out of the box. That's what I like about them. Yeah, they're a little bit long, but I can shoot my Carr PM9 and the Carr P380. I can shoot them pretty fast. And the reason I can shoot them pretty fast is I've been practicing with them. Okay, my PM9 has well over 3,000 rounds downrange. I've had it a while. And the P380, I think I got just short of a 1,000-round trigger job on the P380. I have to admit, something I'm slacking off a little bit on, I haven't been practicing enough with my Pocket 380. I need to practice more with my Pocket 380. But these double-action triggers on all of the Carr Arms series of pistols, I like them. And, you know, one thing I like is because of that long trigger. What I mean by long is the long pull. The trigger has to travel a significant distance. To me, I feel pretty safe putting that in my pocket. That's what I like, is because it makes me feel safe putting it in my pocket. But when I have to draw it, even though I use a pocket holster, it's a comforting feeling to me. Just like the people who put a revolver in their pocket, they have a comforting feeling that there's very little chance that that trigger can get pressed accidentally, especially if it's carried in a proper pocket holster. And that's how I feel about the Carr Arms line of pistols. The Sig Sauer P290, the P290 RS with the restrike capability. You know, I've had a chance to dry fire one of those recently, and that's not a bad trigger either. That's a pretty decent trigger. Pretty decent trigger on that. So I have to kind of give Sig credit for that. That's a nice little single stack 9mm gun that I'm kind of thinking about adding to my collection. Not quite sure yet. However, it does come out of the box with some real nice Sig night sights, and it's a very well-built pistol. I mean, hey, Sigs are well-built guns. So, you know, guns like the P290, guns like the Carr Arms line of pistols, great triggers. Now, let's get back to M&P guns for a minute. The M&P Shield, that's got a very nice trigger on it. It's got a very nice reset. You know, it's got a very nice positive tactile reset that you can feel and almost hear when that trigger resets. In case you didn't know, on June 30th, Ben and I are giving away a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. Mine! I'm parting with it. Why? Because I want to give back to the listeners. And I got a few other plans for a single stack gun that I'll be talking about later on. But you can own my M&P Shield, 9mm. It's got nice night sights on it, orange dot front, tritium rear night sights by Ameriglow. Four magazines with it, 3.8 rounders and a 7 rounder. One lucky winner, who's a member of our Shooters Club video program, is going to win that. And of course, you guys know, we'll have some other giveaways, which I'll be talking about a little bit later on. I really like the trigger on the M&P Shield. I also like the trigger on an XDS pistol. Now, that was before the recall. I heard that Springfield were shipping some of the XDSs back with horrible triggers. I mean, they had to do something to the trigger, I'm pretty sure, to fix the recall. Now, I got a chance to dry fire at a shop. I got a chance to dry fire an XDS pistol that was built post-recall. Not bad. I got to say, not bad. Pretty decent trigger on those. On the ones that you buy that were built after the recall. Unfortunately, boy, you know, I mean, Springfield makes great products. You know, almost everything they make is good, but they kind of got a little bit of a black eye, in my opinion, sending people guns that were sent in for recall repair, sending them back with worse triggers than they came in with. You know, I don't know if that's all that great, but a lot of people still love those XDS pistols. The new Glock 42, typical Glock trigger, okay, on that little bitty 380 that Glock is putting out. So, you know, get to know the trigger and learn to get a gun. Get a gun. If you're shopping for a gun, if you're shopping for a new gun, or if it's your first purchase or whatever, pay close attention to that trigger. Because I think a trigger is very, very important. Like I said in the beginning, it's one of the most important, if not the most important part of your pistol. You know, if you don't have good trigger control, it's going to be hard for the rest of your shooting to fall into place. You know, if you go to any good training class, if the instructor is worth his salt or her salt, one of the first things that they do, they spend a little bit of time getting the marksmanship fundamentals down pat. And when I teach a course, when Ben and I teach a course, or whenever I teach a Suarez International class, or even the class coming up that we're doing with Glenn Tate up in Washington, which is almost sold out, and the class that we're going to do with John Hadaway up in Arkansas, which I think already has about 6 or 7 people signed up for it, we're going to spend a little bit of time in the beginning of the class on marksmanship. We're going to make sure that everybody's dialed in and that they got their trigger press and their sight alignment, and their grip, and their alignment and stance and all that. We're going to make sure that you got that stuff down. Okay, so that's the little bit about triggers. Now, most of you know my background does not come from gunsmithing. And I'm not ex-law enforcement, and I'm not ex-military. I'm just an everyday guy that developed a love for shooting, believed strongly in my Second Amendment rights, decided to carry a gun every day, and now on a part-time basis, I do some instructing. So, I'm sorry if I didn't explain triggers in a real technical way. I'm not really all that technical. And, you know, I leave the technical stuff up to the gunsmiths. I just shoot these darn guns, and when something goes wrong, I normally hand it off to somebody else and say, here, fix it. Okay, that's me. I'm sorry about that, but that's me. So I'm sorry I didn't give you a really good technical explanation of how these triggers work, but just pay real close attention to the trigger. Okay, we're going to have a brief break here, and then you're going to hear a small segment from the interview that I recently did with Chaz, the unnamed trucker from the Road Gunner podcast. You're going to hear just the part that where we talked about triggers. Stay tuned.
And now, let's talk about that 1,000-round trigger job.
Yeah, 1,000-round trigger job. Your question is, what's the purpose of it? First of all, I didn't invent this term. I read it on a forum somewhere, and if I could remember where it was I read it and find it, I would give credit. Right now, if you Google 1,000-round trigger job, you'll probably find my name all over the place. What is the 1,000-round trigger job? I did a podcast, I think it was 6 or 7 months ago, dedicated to it. Basically, a lot of people like to mess with their trigger before they even fire very many rounds out of the gun. I don't know why anybody would want to mess with a 1911 trigger, because most of the triggers on most decent quality 1911s are excellent. A lot of people, when they buy a striker-fired gun or a double-action-only gun, first thing they want to do is go find some gunsmith that can do a trigger job on it. The 1,000-round trigger job is basically this. Shoot your gun 1,000 times. After you shoot your gun 1,000 rounds, you will know whether that trigger works for you or whether it does not. And if it does not, you'll know what kind of modifications you want to do to your trigger. And here's why I suggest it. I've spent a lot of money. Man, I tell you what, I've lost track of how much money I've spent since 2005 when I started shooting, messing with triggers. And sometimes I would change something and then go out and shoot and didn't like it. So then I'd change it back. And then somebody would talk me into changing out a certain spring. So I'd change that out and I'd go, oh yeah, that's good. But sometimes I messed up the trigger completely and caused a gun to be unreliable. And then I had to switch back to factory configuration. So sometimes I was in a shooting match and the trigger was too light. I was in a competition match. Trigger was too light and I'm sending rounds down range and not putting them where I want because I fired too soon. These are things that a lot of people don't seem to think about. So go out and shoot your gun 1,000 times. And you know what the other reason for the 1,000-round trigger job is?
What's that?
The shooter, I believe, needs that much practice.
It can't hurt, can it? So what happens mechanically with the gun after a 1,000-round trigger job? What is happening during those 1,000 rounds?
Well, the trigger parts are starting to smooth out on just about any gun. I've had people ask me if dry fire counts, and not really. It does a little bit. You can smooth out the trigger parts on a Glock, for example, or even on an M&P by dry firing it 1,000 times. But the reason live fire makes a difference is what I said earlier. The gun needs broken in, and the shooter needs broken in. Funny thing, Chaz, I don't know what happens, but I've seen people become a lot better shooter after the 1,000th round than they were on the first round. And you don't even have to mess with your trigger. You're going to be a better shooter because you're going to know what your trigger feels like. You're going to know how your gun shoots. You're going to get better. I don't see how you couldn't get better if you fired 1,000 rounds, especially if most or all of those 1,000 rounds are under the supervision of a good instructor.
So you're going to get recoil acclimation. You're going to get familiar with the way, and this goes to some of the later questions I have for you, is how your trigger feels, where you are hitting with it, the point of aim and point of impact, and a lot of things that can get you much more value than just giving your gun to a gunsmith and getting a $35 trigger job.
Yeah, I mean, here's something else. You know, people rush out and get a trigger job done right away. What if your sights are off? What if your ammunition is terrible and the gun doesn't like it and the gun doesn't shoot well with that ammo?
Right.
You know, a nice, smoothed-out, lightened trigger is not going to do you any good if your sights are off.
And a lot of people, if you lighten up your trigger down to basically it's a telekinetic 1.5 pound trigger. It's gonna you're gonna get light primer strikes if you have a hammer fired gun. You're gonna rely more on that light trigger rather than the fundamentals and mechanics of trigger control. And you're still gonna wank them. So if you're not a good shooter in the first place, it's not gonna help you at all.
Right. You know, there are two things to consider. There's inherent accuracy and shooter accuracy. And maybe doing a trigger job might make your gun inherently more accurate, but if you suck with the gun, if you can't hit, if you're not practicing the proper fundamentals of marksmanship, I don't care how light you make the trigger, give it a 1 pound trigger. If you're not doing everything else right, you're probably not going to be much more accurate than if you left it stock.
Right. And a lot of people are going to poo-poo this, and they're going to say, well, I don't need to take it to a gunsmith. I don't need to put 1,000 rounds through it. I'll just go on YouTube and learn how to do the 25-cent trigger job. What is a 25? I know better than to try to do that kind of stuff. Can you explain what the infamous 25-cent trigger job is?
I don't know where the name came from. But basically, Glock owner started it. It's basically taking the trigger parts out of your Glock, polishing them up a little bit and putting them back in. And by polishing them up, maybe changing a spring or two, You can smooth up the trigger. I don't know, maybe it's only 25 cents worth of parts or something like that. You can smooth out the trigger. And yeah, you can make the gun slightly inherently or mechanically more accurate, I guess is the proper term, because, you know, you're less likely to jerk the trigger if it's lightened up, for example. That's the theory anyway. I don't believe that. I've seen a lot of people come to our training classes and they've had trigger jobs done. And I got to tell you, they're not very good shots because they're doing everything else wrong. They're still jerking the trigger. They still don't have proper sight alignment. They don't have the right grip, the right stance. Nobody's worked with them.
I'm going to confess something right now before you and the entire Road Gunner Podcast audience. Bob, I'm a trigger wanker.
Well,
I've done a 1,000-round trigger job with my Glock 19 Gen 4, and I have a trigger job on my 1911. And the first time, whenever I bring them to the range, I'm still shooting low left. I have to tune it in. I am an incurable, unstoppable trigger wanker, and I know that it's me. And it doesn't matter what the trigger is. I actually shoot better during, if I'm going to not shoot something for a while and go cold turkey and go to the range, the best gun I have as far as accuracy with me is my M&P Shield, because it's got a horrible trigger on it. It actually has a good trigger, but I don't prefer it. When we say good trigger, bad trigger, this is all, of course, opinions. And my M&P 9 Shield has got a fairly stiff, heavy trigger, but I shoot better with it because I have to concentrate with it more. And I know that I do. So that's my confession. I'll try to get over it. And, of course, shooting is a perishable skill, and a light trigger is not going to cure it.
Well, I'm glad your trigger is the only thing that you're wanking.
Well, that's between me and my lovely boy. So what I just mentioned, that I find the Shield to be, quote-unquote, a bad trigger. I mean, a lot of people call it a good trigger. So what is a good trigger, and how do you describe it?
I think a good trigger is a trigger that does not have a whole lot of take-up. And for new shooters, that means the amount of trigger travel before you start to feel some resistance and before the gun fires. Some guns you'll pick up and it's like, you know, you really got to pull that trigger back pretty far before you start to feel it tighten up and the gun will fire. I like to have a short take up, and I also like to have a real short reset. It's one thing I love about 1911s. For people that are new, the reset means after you fire the round, you slowly let the trigger out until you either hear or feel that trigger reset itself. In other words, you'll sometimes, like with Glocks, you'll hear a click. With 1911s, you'll feel it. With most guns out there, you'll feel when that trigger gets to the point where it's going to allow you to fire that pistol again. I like to have that distance as short as I possibly can get it. And that's where 1911s really shine.
And the take-up, like you explained, is basically, or also known as slack, that's the actual movement of the trigger as you press it rearward, where the gun is not actually doing any function. It's just coming into the section where the sear is starting to engage. And that when you start to feel resistance, the next term that people often use is called stacking, where it starts to get heavier as you continue to press the trigger rearward until you get the next term, the break, when the sear releases the striker or the hammer and the firing pin connects with the primer.
Right.
So one of the things that people talk about with a good trigger is during the take-up, like in a Smith & Wesson M&P and a standard and the older ones,
yeah,
you will start to pull the trigger backwards, and during the slack or the take-up, you'll actually feel something like it feels gritty. Do you have the same experience with the M&P pistol where you feel a little bit of fits and starts as you're pulling it back?
Yeah, especially with the double-stack M&Ps, you know, the full-size service guns or even the compacts. Now, the M&P Shield is not quite as bad, but All this mechanical stuff that we're talking about, all this mechanical stuff, earlier when you and I started this interview, you know, we talked about trigger jobs. You can fix some of this stuff with a trigger job. You can reduce the amount of take up, you can reduce the amount of stacking, you can make it break cleaner, you can shorten the reset, you can do all that stuff with a trigger job, and that's all fine and dandy. I just say, go to the range, take a class or two, or even practice, or shoot IDPA, USPSA, run 1,000 rounds through the gun so that you're comfortable, so that you know what you're doing. So, and here's why. Because when you shoot low and left after you've done a trigger job, it's probably not the trigger.
Right.
And it probably there's no amount of trigger work that can fix shooting low and left.
So if you do your 1,000 round trigger job and you're taking the parts as they are and wearing them into each other, you might even end up with a better trigger job than if you had taken it to a gunsmith, because those parts are going to wear naturally together where they want to go, and that grittiness in the MEP trigger is going to smooth itself out. The stacking will probably, as the springs start to wear in, is going to start to go away, and there's nothing in the world that can fix the standard MEP reset, but the newer MEPs, I think, have a better reset. The Shield has a great reset.
Yeah.
And there's some other polymer guns out there that are pretty awesome. I like the Walther PPQ because the slack is pretty short, and it's super smooth, and it has very little stacking, a very crisp break, and an extremely short reset. So that's what I've been toting around for a while. It's the new Walther PPQ, and I would call that, as for my preference, I would call that a good trigger for all the reasons that I just said.
Yeah, I got a chance to go to a local gun shop recently that had a Walther PPQ on the shelf. It almost went home with me, but I had a few other priorities. But I was dry firing it, and it is nice. It's very nice. That's one of the best, if not the best, striker fired trigger that I've ever had a chance to feel.
And it's got some other nice things going for it. The grip feels really nice. The extended slide and stop is super nice. The finish on it is excellent. It's not a pretty gun, but it does work, and it's a little bit longer than my Glock 19, but it fits the same purpose. It's the 15 round magazines and whatnot. I like it, but I want to ask you some questions again about triggers, because this isn't about any specific brand or anything like that. With a gun like a Glock, and we'll use the Glock as an example because it's the most prolific of the polymer frame pistols out there, and even with the M&P, which has a similar trigger or a similar system, should you stage your trigger, or should you press it straight back to the rear without stopping, as some folks say that you should do when you are firing a gun?
That's a good question. I don't know if I'm going to be able to completely answer that question. Here's why. Most of the shooting I do, most of the training that I do, I'm either training in the defensive use of a handgun or I'm out in a USPSA or IDPA competition. Maybe I stage it, I don't know. Maybe I do it without thinking. I'm not thinking about staging the trigger. And I think what you're talking about is pressing it till it gets all the take up out of it, and then pausing, get your sights on target, and then press some more to fire the gun, right?
Right.
Let me tell you what, in a competition match or under the stress of combat training, that's the last thing I'm thinking about.
Yeah. My recommendation is that you do not touch the trigger at all until, of course, your sights are on the target and you've assessed that this target is a threat, and I'm talking about defensive shooting, and you're not going to think about staging it or pressing it straight to the rear. You're just going to probably press it straight to the rear, and you're probably going to yank it a lot because you're under a lot of stress. What I mean by we explained what staging was, is to take the slack up until you start to feel it, the resistance, and then to take pause and continue to press straight back while you hold your sights on target. Now, that's great for target shooting.
Right.
And where you can pause, breathe out and let it go if you've got time, and if you're taking a long shot, that may be where you have a little bit of extra time, even in a defensive situation. And there's another argument there, should you take a long shot over 25 yards in a defensive situation? Doesn't happen a whole lot. It does happen though. Maybe in that kind of situation, that would be where you would want to take up the slack and then take another second to realign your sights. But at 2 feet, you're not going to think about it at all. You're just going to press it straight back.
No.
And hope. Yeah.
That's true. Now, hunters will stage a trigger. You know, deer hunters that are taking a 200-yard shot and they want to be precise. Yeah, absolutely. But handguns are defensive tools. We all know that they're used from about a distance of 5 feet to about 20 feet. Those are the typical, maybe 25 feet at the most. And chances are, if a bad guy is that close to you and wants to kill you, you're not going to worry about staging a trigger.
Yeah, not at all. But I ask these questions for a reason, because they make people think about it, and then I like to confuse and anger some folks, because that's what I like. So let's talk about some of the different trigger. The trigger is the fire control mechanism for all the different styles of handguns, and we're talking about semi-automatics here. And in the case of and then there, of course, revolvers, there are either double action or single action. Or let's talk about your preferences of the striker fire, the double action, single action, or single action only platform like the 1911, and maybe you can explain what those are to our listeners.
Sure, I will. And again, I'm probably going to make some people mad, but that's just kind of the way it goes.
Oh, I love making people mad, because it makes them think. And if you can get them mad and then maybe calm them down and you can articulate your reasonings, I think it's a good thing sometimes. So,
well, I'll do the best I can to articulate the reasonings.
All right. I want white hot fury from some people.
Here we go. Let it rip. The first handgun that I ever owned was a Sig Sauer P226 in 9mm.
That's a big honking gun.
It's a big honking gun. It is a double-action, single-action gun. For people that don't know what that means that the first shot that you fire, assuming that it's decocked when you fire the first shot, is a double-action trigger. Every shot after that, the gun is in single-action mode, and those are typically much shorter, much lighter trigger pulls with a shorter reset.
Now stop right there.
Yeah.
Double-action means that the trigger is performing two actions when you start to pull the trigger. It is cocking the hammer and then releasing it.
Right.
Whereas a single action mode after, in a double action, single action gun, you fire in double action mode, assuming it's decocked. As the first action is the hammer's cocked back and then it's released. That's the second action. The gun goes off if it's properly charged, of course. The slide retracts, cocks, and then the slide actually physically cocks the hammer back. Then your next shot is your trigger is performing one action only.
Right.
It is releasing the hammer. That's what a double action, single action is for those who don't know what that is. Okay.
Yeah. Continue. Yeah, you described it well. Very good. And thanks. I don't like those triggers. I didn't have that
Bob, I freaking hate them. Go ahead.
I wouldn't say I hate them, but I could never get good with it. I gave that Sig 226. I gave it a 1,000-round trigger job. You know, I owned that gun almost 2 years. I tried and I competed with it. I just simply could not get used to shooting it well. Some people do. Some of our military men and women who carry Berettas, which is a double action, single action, some people love it. It takes, in my opinion, it takes an enormous amount of practice and training for a beginning shooter to get good with a gun that's double action, single action. For most people, some can. The kind of trigger I like a trigger that's always consistent. It does the same thing every time. A single action only trigger on a 1911 is the same every time. Striker fired guns like M&Ps, XDs, Glocks, Tauruses, Ruger striker fired guns, it's the same trigger every single time. Same as your Walther. It's the same. Right. Same trigger every time. I like consistency. I like to know that the trigger is going to do X, Y, and Z when I press it versus, let's see. Oh, that's right. The first shot's double action. Oh, now I'm in single action. You know, and listen, there's great competition shooters. Bruce Gray was an excellent, excellent championship competition shooter, and now he's an excellent gunsmith and also a trainer. He could shoot the double action, single action, excellent. There was another guy named, I think it was Ernest Langdon, also was pretty good at the double action.
What about Max Michel,
Max Michel. Yeah. But how many people listening to this podcast are Max Michel?
One. Or you know? None. Yeah. He probably didn't listen. But
How many people listening to this show have the time and the ammo to spend to be Max Michelle?
Very few.
Right. So my suggestion is always to get a gun that has the same trigger pull every single time.
Right. And when I wanted to say, look, I don't actually hate double actions, single action guns. I'm just not very proficient with them. I have owned a Sig Sauer P229 Gen 2 SAS. It was the most expensive gun I ever bought. And it was a 357 Sig. It was awesome. It was just not ever going to be a carry gun for me because it's a lot heavier than a Glock 19 for the same size. And I prefer, and we all talk about, you know, what we like, and well, I'm just talking about what I prefer. These are all valid weapon systems, and what people often do is they seek validation in their own choices. A lot of folks who listen to this podcast are going to go, oh, yeah, I hope they talk up the Walther or the Glock or the 1911, because that's the tribe that they're in, and they seek validation for their choices. And your choice is valid. I'm going to validate everyone who's listening right now. Your choice is valid if you go out there and you choose to carry a gun legally. So,
yeah.
My preference is the striker-fired guns, and that's a lot. That's kind of harder to explain because there's so many different striker-fired systems between the Carr and the Walther and the Springfield XD. Basically, what happens is there's the trigger pulls back the firing pin directly and then releases it off of a cam. And there's, you know, the Springfield XD is called a single action only by the ATF because it's fully cocked, I guess.
It's fully cocked when you chamber around. Supposedly, a Springfield XD is fully cocked. However, IDPA just properly put that into the stock service pistol division where it belonged anyway.
Right. And the Glock is considered double action because the striker is only partially cocked, and then when you start to pull trigger, that's why it feels different, by the way. It is starting to pull that striker back even farther, and then it releases it as double action. The Walther is considered a single action gun because it's fully cocked, and so on and so forth. So when it comes to that, but as long as the trigger feels the same every time, that's the preference that I have. So,
well, let me say this, something about double action, single action guns. Probably going to anger some people further, but here
goes.
Let's
go. I like it. Let's go.
Chaz, at the date of recording this podcast, I was thinking about it just last night. I have either participated in or have been an instructor in probably over 25 training classes. And I've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds go down range. I'm not an expert, but, you know, I'm seeing a lot of stuff out there. And people that come to class with double-action, single-action guns, their first shot is always the least accurate of all of their shots. I shouldn't say always. Most of the time, the very first shot, which is double-action, is less accurate. And a lot of them say, well, that's okay, because look at this other group over here. They're all within an inch of each other. Now, let's think about a real defensive use of a handgun. Your life is on the line. The bad guy is about to kill you. Which shot do you want to be the most accurate?
I'd like the first one.
I would like the first one, too. But if your first shot is the least accurate because you can't get used to that double action trigger, and again, I've seen it at the range, the first shot will be 3 inches away from the group of the second through the tenth shots, I start to think, well, wait a minute. They're less accurate on their first shot, and that might be the most important shot. You know, we've all heard the rule of threes that most gunfights are over in 3 shots, 3 seconds within 3 yards, right?
Right.
And that's probably still mostly true. Well, if you only got 3 shots, or if that's typically all you're going to fire, don't you want the first one to be the most accurate?
Personally, yes, I do. I think that should be, absolutely.
And there are a lot of reports of a defensive use of a handgun being over after the first shot. It doesn't mean it's an automatic one-stop shot, but it means bad guy realized, good guy had a gun, good guy fired one time, that's it, bad guy's changing his mind, right?
Right.
Okay.
There was recently on the Pro Arms podcast, there was a they discussed a shooting that happened in Kent, Washington. I forget the name of the gentleman, but he's a jeweler in Kent, Washington, and he was attacked in his store. A gunman came in with his gun out. He was luckily there was a little bit of a delay as a customer tried to prevent the guy from coming in the store. She saw a guy coming in with the gun out. She delayed him by about a quarter second. He comes in. The concealed carry person, the owner of the store, was carrying a Kimber 1911 and 45. They had the wherewithal to draw from concealment, disengage the safety, and put a round in the center of the guy's, or basically in his clavicle. So it wasn't super accurate, but it was a hit. And the perpetrator ended up dying later. His second shot, as he dropped to the floor, went into the ceiling.
So there you go.
He made good on his first shot. But well, the second one wanked it.
You just made my point. So don't you want the first shot to be the most accurate?
Yes.
And
absolutely.
And a Kimber 1911. Yeah. A Kimber 1911 is a single action gun. So every single trigger press is the same thing. So that's one reason why I don't care for the DASA guns. And I see a lot of students accepting poor accuracy from their first shot because the second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth shots are all right where they want them to be because they're firing single action. I think they got that reversed.
Yeah, I think they do. I think it's good to train with it. If you're gonna carry one of those guns, I would do as much in double action as possible. Fire your shot in double action. Don't cheat. You're going to carry that way. So
right.
Carry it in double action. After each shot, decock it. If it's
right.
Got a decocking lever on the side, so much the better, like a SIG. Decock it after every shot and practice that double action trigger pull so that you're as accurate as possible with it and you're familiar with it. And so the single action at that point just becomes a bonus.
By the way, how did that guy put a round in the ceiling with his Kimber?
He dropped to the floor, and as he was dropping to the floor, his gun kind of, his wrist was still pointed towards the shooter, and it hit the jewel counter, and it kind of deflected his wrist in an upward angle.
Okay. Wow. Well, see, and that goes back to, you know, we're responsible for every bullet that comes out of your gun, so you better know what you're doing, and you better be trained.
It did not go straight up into the ceiling. It was at an angle that kind of went over the guy's head and over the heads of all the other people that were in the store, customers and other workers and things like that. There was, in this case, a person downrange as well with the threat. So that's likely to be the case if you are with in public. There's going to be people downrange that are not threats that you need to have an accurate gun,
right?
An accurate system. So,
yeah. Hey Chaz, before we go further, can I throw something else in?
Please do.
I know there are a lot of people listening to this that have a double action, single action pistol, and they're going to get real mad at me and saying you and I hate mail because they're really good with it, and they probably are. And God bless you. If you're good with your double action, single action gun, if you're good in both modes, double action and single action, God bless you. Keep that pistol, use it, carry it, train with it. I'm just saying that as a general rule, new shooters especially, new shooters seem to have a tough time with those types of pistols at first.
Right. And I own a 6-hour, so I have zero issues with the quality. And let me reiterate to the nth degree, I have a preference for double action or single action only pistols because
right.
of the trigger press.
Right.
I think if I'm validating you right now, if you carry a double action, single action, carry on. I think you made a good choice for you. Please make sure that you practice in that double action mode as much as possible. Practice the things that you don't like to do. One-handed shooting, unusual positions, left-handed only, weak-handed only, that kind of stuff. If you become an expert with your double action, single action, carry on. That's completely my preference. And so send your hate mail to bob@handgunworld.com.
There you go.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. Gunrightsradio.com.
Okay, hope you enjoyed that. I'm not going to add much to that. I've kind of spent a lot of time here talking to you individually about triggers, or you got a chance to listen to that interview where I just spent a lot of time on triggers. What do you think? Let me know. Call in a voicemail. 210-646-1727 is the voicemail number. By the way, next week I'm going to be answering some more voicemails. About every 2 or 3 weeks I get to these voicemails, and I've received 3 or 4 of them here in the last week or so. So I'll be getting to more of those next week. Again, it's 210-646-1727. Or if you don't want to remember that phone number, go to handgunworld.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. On the right, you'll see a Call Me button with a picture of a telephone. Just click that, and you'll get instructions on how to connect your phone with my voicemail. You can leave voicemails up to 3 minutes in length. Love to hear what you have to say about this episode or other episodes, and your comments are welcome if you have things you want to share with other listeners, and so on and so forth. The other thing that comes to mind real quick is some of you, I know you want to support my show because, hey, have you noticed something? Have you noticed what's not on this show? A whole bunch of commercials. I don't run a whole bunch of commercials from sponsors. I don't do that. I don't want to waste your time doing that. So this show is supported by generous listeners like you. If you're going to purchase something on Amazon, hey, would you head on over to handgunworld.com and click the page that says Amazon store and use that link that you see right there and buy it from my Amazon store. I'm a member of the Amazon Associates affiliate program. Every time you make a purchase on Amazon, the Handgun World podcast gets a little bit of a benefit from that. Okay, they send me a little bit of a commission, so you don't have to spend any extra money to support what I do. Hope you like what I do. The listener count keeps growing, so obviously I'm doing something that people seem to be enjoying. Support me a little bit. Head on over to the handgunworld.com website and click my Amazon store page and make whatever Amazon purchases you can. Bookmark that page, you know, so you can come back to it later and all that good stuff. Well, thanks for listening to another episode on triggers. Hopefully, I got you thinking, and you might have some questions. So I'd like to revisit this topic again in a few weeks and maybe do a Triggers Part 2 podcast after I get some feedback from some of you. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.